feminist women.
Mulheres feministas.
Zanone feminis.
Vanyu vachikonzero chevakadzi.
Nessa.
Mulheres feministas.
Yan femini. Um femactivi.
Nari mukti.
Matapang na babae. Kechi mai. Ka ishk.
Welcome and good afternoon to Women's Magazine, The Space Between Us. I am your host every third Monday, Javelin Richards, The Space Between Us. The Space Between Us, as I like to think about it, as you've been listening to me and some of my new audience members, the space between women, what holds us together and what separates us from one another, and how can we become better allies to ourselves and to one another. I like to also think about it as if we're gathering at a river. Everyone knows that I enjoy water during this program. How and why over time have women gathered at water? Whatever tribes, communities they come from, they come to the water, whether it's to bathe themselves for a glass of water, water for cooking, and that's where they began to share stories with one another about their lives, their communities, their language. It is there in which we began to know one another. On today's show, what separates us, the space between us, what gathers us, is all about the journey into body, mind, and soul. Lucky us today. The first part of the show, we're going to talk about the journey between ourselves of health care and chronic illness. The second half, the route to ourselves, that journey through intimacy and sexuality. And I have three wonderful guests. First half of the hour, we're going to talk with Ani Taab-Upa Wallace. And she, and the name I struggle with, but we'll correct that. And she's going to talk about chronic illness. She's a physical therapist, just graduated, started off as a yoga instructor, have always been interested in the body and her life work and her journey. And now as a graduate, she's about to move into the world as a physical therapist. And she'll talk about that and how she came to do the work that she has been doing. At about 1:15, I'm opening a phone line so that you can call in if you have questions to talk about your experience of anything she speaks about, if you have a story around that. And remember, the space between us is about story. It's about what is your story as it relates to the topics today. Before we get started, I want to say that there are going to be tickets as during the time I open the hour for both guests. At any time with your questions or thoughts you want to contribute, I'm also going to be giving away three passes to the International Film Festival, which happens September 19th to the 29th. You can go to the website to look at some of the films at oiff.org. I had a chance to look at Lalo's House, written and directed by Kelly Colley. She's an anthropology filmmaker. It's a fiction narrative, and it's based on a true story. And it's all about trafficking in Haiti. And what she explores in that film is absolutely stunning and beautiful and painful. So give a call if you're interested in the film festival. Go to the site again at oiff.org. And then also for Kelly Colley's film, I'm going to be giving away three passes to our guests that call in to talk to the guests that I presently have on today. So here we go. Welcome. I call her Tia, so you're going to hear me call my first guest, Tia. Hi, Tia. How you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you, Javelin?
I'm doing pretty good. So, Tia, take the audience on the journey of how you came into becoming a PT and some of that came from your own body experience and your interest in body over the years. Tell us that story.
Well, at least I'll start with the journey towards what led me towards physical therapy. And before I even considered physical therapy, I had just gotten married. And very soon after I got married, I got pregnant and with my first child. And I had some physical complications from that pregnancy and ended up miscarrying my son at about 20 weeks with that pregnancy. And I remember going through that, actually before, probably even while I was pregnant with him, and maybe even a little bit before that, I was teaching yoga. And I had to PT student, or not PT student, sorry, I had two students, yoga students, ask me if I was a physical therapist. And it was kind of around the same time that I was questioning and wondering what my next step was. Like, I just got married and, you know, I'm living in Oakland and I've been teaching yoga for a certain amount of time. And I knew that I wanted to do something more. And I really wasn't sure what that was. And I had put the question out to the universe, and the universe came back, and I had two or three yoga students ask me if I was a PT. I didn't know what it was, never even something that I considered. So I looked into it and realized, oh, you know, it pretty much aligns with a lot of what I was doing already as a yoga teacher. So around that time, I had signed up for my first set of classes, which I was going to start in January of that year. And I had miscarried in January of 2012. And classes had already started around the time that I miscarried. And I remember, it happened on a Thursday. I got back home and I was just home for the weekend crying and, you know, just at a really, really low point. And classes were starting on Monday. And I knew that I could either get myself up and take myself to class and just kind of just start, or I could stay in bed and just, you know, wallow in my grief. And I chose to get up and, you know, go to class. And that is really kind of what set me off. And I always remember, very vividly, you know, that moment of, you know, that choice that I could make. I could either, I don't want to say feel sorry for myself, but I could either just stay in grief, or I can move forward. And I chose to move forward. And that was what really spurred me on with at least the journey towards PT. And I would even just say the journey towards becoming a yoga teacher and just even being so interested in the body, it really, I don't know, my mom might be listening to this or not. I'm not really sure, but it was really because of her. It was my mom. And my mom was a nurse. She retired last fall and had been a nurse for, you know, 30 plus years. She saw what it did to her body, and just that breakdown of her body over time. And with also just the lack of care, you know, that self-care for herself, because she was working two jobs, you know, she was taking care of me and my three sisters. And it was a lot, you know, just even for her to find time to sleep, you know, was tough. And she was doing the best that she could, you know, with what she knew and what she had. And for me as a yoga teacher, when I was a yoga teacher, and for me now as a physical therapist, it's, yes, I want to combine those two worlds of, yes, the physical body, absolutely, but also that realm of self-care and of being able to take care of oneself and finding those tools. And my biggest mission right now is just really helping to break that stigma of what self-care is. And so whether it's people thinking of self-care being something that's luxurious or expensive, and, you know, that self-care can be a daily ritual or routine that they do. And it's really by just checking in, you know, tuning into oneself and really figuring out, like, okay, what is it that my body or my mental space, you know, needs right now at this moment? And then being able to apply whatever those self-care tools in order to be able to help meet that.
So you think by finding out what our self-care is, mm-hmm. and be able to address that in present time, that it would somehow support us in preventing chronic illness?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you think of chronic illness, I mean, it doesn't necessarily have to be what most people think of, like diabetes or high blood pressure, but even chronic low back pain, you know, that is a chronic illness that America, you know, is facing. You know, it's one of, I don't know what the numbers are, but it's definitely one of the highest injuries or illnesses that a lot of Americans will suffer, you know, over the course of their life. And a lot of it, you know, very much is due to our sedentary culture. A lot of it is due to our culture of sitting and not a lot of movement. And even that can be considered a chronic illness. And I think that by tapping into developing that awareness of what it is that your body needs, I think that can help to decrease the amount of chronic illness that we see today.
Do you think it's even possible to even know that in the impact of sitting all day, if we are now in a culture that everything that is situated for people to be sitting all day, children sitting all day, mm-hmm. less time playing but sitting, looking at cell phones, that if it's a part of the structure of our culture, how would one even know that sitting, being sedentary, is the reason why we're having lower back pain, if that's what we're required to do? People being born into a sitting culture.
Yeah, we're definitely born into a sitting culture, and I think, you know, it has definitely been demonized in the last couple of years that sitting is bad. It's, you know, just as bad as smoking. But also, I think that there's a realization that, yes, there are a lot of jobs that require us to sit. And I think it's more so much, not so much about just that you're just sitting. I think it's more about the variations of movement. So that, yes, if you're having to sit, but can you also find different ways of sitting, whether it's sitting in a chair or sitting on your couch or sitting on the floor? Like, can you find also different ways that you can be able to be at your workstation and still be able to do, you know, whether it's being on your phone or being on the computer and still be able to do those things? And I think that we are seeing a revolution, especially if you think of in some schools with kids, that there are opportunities where kids aren't having to just sit for, you know, the amount of time that they're in class and just only get like their two recess breaks. But I know that there are some schools where they have standing workstations. There are classrooms where they get to sit on the ground. There's classrooms where they get to move, you know, from one station or one, you know, set of tables to another, and they're not just sitting primarily. And I think it definitely starts, you know, from a very young age where, you know, a kid is, they want to move. Like, that's what they're born, they're ingrained to do that. And then they come into a school system where it's indoctrinated that you need to sit still and you need to be quiet. And I think a lot, I'm hoping, I don't know, maybe it's just the Bay Area, but at least from what I'm seeing is that a lot of schools, they're changing that dynamic. And I think more and more people are seeing that, you know, from just even for an adult, like just sitting still for a long period of time, you get antsy. You want to, you know, do something. And I think with kids, that's very natural for them. They don't want to just sit still.
Are their bodies, so we're talking about kids, mm-hmm. and I want our listening audience members to think about this here as well. And to think about this question before we open the phone lines up, mm-hmm. how do you, so listening audience, how do you, what have you learned about self-care? How do you take care of yourself in present time throughout the day, whether it's relative to you sitting in a chair, whether it's movement, whether it's emotional? Mm-hmm. So stories of self-care, that's from the body, mind, and spirit. Right now we're talking to Tia, who's as a physical therapist, talking about ways in which our body can, the journey to chronic illness, things we can do for ourselves to avoid that, and how she got into becoming a physical therapist because watching and loving her mother and witnessing her mother after 30 years of being a nurse, that in itself, which certainly is not, wasn't a sitting, but just the movement of taking care of patients and not having enough self-care with three daughters and working and not resting enough. And then you're loving your mom, moved into figuring out ways to support people mm-hmm. in their journey to self-care.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, just seeing her and also a lot of the students that I worked with as a yoga teacher.
Why did some of your yoga's teacher ask you that question? Why, are you a physical therapist? Where did that come?
The two or three students, because a lot of the exercises that I was teaching at that time was yoga tune-up. And a lot of it is very much corrective exercises, as well as I implemented a lot of self-massage as well with self-massage therapy balls. And a lot of, or I guess for those students, they had been to physical therapy or might have heard of physical therapy and had likened a lot of what we were doing in class to what they would have received in a physical therapy clinic. So a lot of what I was teaching wasn't necessarily just, you know, hatha yoga, or I taught vinyasa, you know, which is like more flow style, but it was an amalgamation of, you know, yoga, classical yoga, as well as corrective exercise, and really helping to prep the body for being able to do a yoga pose. Because again, you come back to like sedentary culture, and then a person comes to a yoga class where they move for an hour after having been sitting for 8 hours or more, and then they come into a yoga class or any fitness class and expect their body to be able to do all these bendy things. It's totally impossible. Yeah.
You're listening to Tia, who is a physical therapist, and taking us beyond just physical therapy, but the journey to self-care and to look at how to study our daily lives and to interrupt chronic illness. And the phone line, that the number to the phone line is 510-848-4425. That's 510-848-4425. And remember, I'm also giving away 3 tickets to our callers. And the story you're telling, or something that's connected to it, is how do you do self-care? And how that, whether that's emotional, and throughout your day, tell us the story of the water, the river, the space between us. How do you care for yourself? And if you do are challenged with chronic illness, or you have thoughts about your body, you can call and ask Tia questions, and she's more than willing to talk about that. She's coming from a very holistic approach, from yoga, from spiritual, from emotional, from her personal. Tia, what have you learned about your body? And your training as a physical therapist, now you're a mom now. Mm-hmm. And what have you learned about you and your self-care? Because that's pretty strenuous. How old is your daughter now?
She's going to be 5 next month.
She's going to be 5 to start at school. Saw that on Facebook. And you were doing the studying. How did you take care of yourself during that journey for you?
It was really tough.
Did you hear that? She said who's teaching is letting us know straight off the bat. It was really tough. Again, the number is 510-848-4425.
Yeah, it was tough, and it's still tough. I mean, my self-care isn't perfect. I feel like over the years it has gotten better, whereas before it was really non-existent. And it's a lot harder, you know, being a mom and finding that time. But when I first had her, there was no self-care. I wasn't doing anything. Everything was about her. It was primarily about taking care of her and maybe myself getting enough sleep and getting some food and taking a shower. Like, that was my self-care, really. It was like, okay, can I find that time or space to shower or go to the bathroom by myself? You know, just like those basic needs. And I think as she got more independent and got a little bit older, it was like, okay, like, I don't want to say get my body back, but it was like, I want to feel strong again. I want to move my body again, other than just, you know, sitting here and breastfeeding my daughter. And that was what I felt like my first like 6 months of my life, of her life, you know, consisted of. And I was able to find small ways to do it, but it was really challenging, especially not having that support. And not having my parents, you know, nearby, or sisters, you know, to help me. And I think one of the things that I've noticed when it comes to self-care is also community care, you know, because it can't just be about like, how can I take care of myself? It's also like, do you have the support structure? Do you have, whether it's friends, family, neighbors, whatever, to help support you so that you can support yourself and take care of yourself? Because it's never, I don't think it's possible for really anybody to be able to get their self-care in if they don't have that community care, that network of people to help support them. I think that's really, really tough. And that's something that I realized that I really needed. So whether it was, you know, with my partner, or whether I had friends who helped me, like, because I wanted to get back to teaching yoga, and I sought out, you know, 2 friends, and they helped me. They watched my daughter, you know, for the hour and a half to commute, teach a 1-hour yoga class, and come back. And I couldn't have done that. Like, that was my way of just maintaining my sanity and being able to interact and do the thing that I love to do. So whether it was like moving my body, getting to teach others to move better in their body. I feel like in that first 2 years, that was really pertinent for me. And then it changed, because then I started grad school. And then that's like another whole level of commitment as well. Because, I mean, essentially, you know, the program I was in, it's a part-time program, but I felt like a full-time student because I was also having to take care of my daughter full-time and also be a student. And that was even harder to be able to, you know, find that time to take care of myself, because I also had to study.
So if you had a patient that came to you and said, hi, I have a 3-year-old, mm-hmm. and I'm about to start grad school, and it's overwhelming.
Yeah.
And you're treating them now as a physical therapist, but that person would be you. Mm-hmm. Sort of the question of, what would you tell your 10-year-old self or your 15-year-old self? What would you say to them of how to take care of themselves? So they come to you, they got this baby, they just started grad school, and they have a partner.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, I don't know how to take care of myself. What would be your recommendation?
I'd say the
description.
I'd say the biggest thing is start getting comfortable asking for help. That was, because it's still a big problem for me.
That's another question for our listening audience. How comfortable are you? We have a call. Let's see. We have on hold Dalia. Dalia? Did I get, yes. Hello?
No, that's not the first one. The first one.
Kangas, we have a call on Kangas on line one. Hi, Kangas. Welcome to the space between us and join us at the river.
Hi.
Hi.
Great program. I've raised seven kids myself, and I'm a naturopathic doctor, and prevention is mainly what I teach my patients, because I don't think it's going to be a long time before we get Medicare for all.
Yeah.
So I tell people, you know, you're going to have to do what you can do. And don't ask the government for any help, because you're going to have to learn to do it. So I teach things like what Linus Pauling taught, the need to take vitamin C every hour. I teach what Dr. Wallach teaches about the need to drink liquid colloidal minerals once or twice a day. And I send all my patients to, I recommend they all go see a chiropractor at least once a month, because if you get an adjustment before a problem happens, you end up not having as much of a problem.
So, Congress, I have a question for you.
Sure.
As a part of sharing the story, how do you take care of yourself? What's the story of that?
Oh, I do all these things for myself. Let me tell you, when I wrote my doctoral thesis, what I did was I tried to find, see, my goal was to live to be 111 years old. And there's a secret to that number. And the reason I was, so I was, when I was in medical school, that's what I was studying. I was looking for books that would tell me how to make it to 111.
We got to go quick, though. I got to hear the story of how you take care of yourself in about 30 seconds, because we have three other callers on the line.
Just,
what do you do? What did you do today? I know that you take vitamin C every 3 hours. You drink some type of mineral water. If I got the wrong, I apologize. But what else outside of that do you how do you take care of yourself?
Oh, I exercise every day. And the people I work with, most of my patients are parents with autistic kids. So one of the things we find is that avoiding vaccinations is the number one way to prevent autism, according to
absolutely.
A UC Davis study.
Okay, so Congress, okay, we're going to thank you so much, Congress, for joining us at the Water the Space Between Us. And Malcolm is our next caller. Hi, Malcolm. How you doing? Welcome to the Space Between Us. Join us at the river with my guest, Tia.
Hi. Hi. I just wanted to kind of toss in, just like you're asking, things I do with a little extra comment on children. I'm fairly healthy, but I do feel like I'm mitigating certain things. And generally throughout my day, I'm checking in with my body. I'm checking in with my breath. I've noticed that my diaphragm is probably a bit constricted from having tight breaths throughout my life. Mm-hmm. And so I've been working on that. And along with my breath, I find that posture is a big deal, where if I align my posture, I actually notice that my breath is harder to get a full breath when my posture is where it should be. And that's probably because of tightness that, you know, it's just not used to it. So I've been walking and breathing, working on my posture, and these are things I can kind of just do throughout my day. And I have noticed it's been useful, and it's also something that is certain with the practice of mindfulness, being aware of throughout your day, and just checking in. And the other aspect of my daily kind of like maintenance is just moving, stretching as I feel fit, and doing my best to not feel self-conscious about it, especially if I'm in a public space. And there's this gets to the children, because with kids, they don't, at a certain age, they still haven't become self-conscious, and they'll notice them just moving and having like a more dynamic range of motion, and they're just kind of bending and turning. As I understand it, they're kind of doing their own kind of maintenance as they're doing this kind of stuff. And as adults, we are taught to behave and move in certain like normative ways, which is tight. It's quite tight. It's quite rigid. And so
I think you're right.
It's too
Absolutely,
about that, about
I think you're right, Malcolm, in terms of the kids and their self-maintenance. I want to thank you for joining us at the river. Thank you so much for sharing us about what you do for your body, checking on your breathing, your posture. And Tia, with children, is it that they innately know, or is it just, is it a more that physically their bodies are developing, so their bodies is running in all kind of rhythms to develop, like crawling, like they don't innately know, tomorrow I need to start crawling, their bodies just start the motion, like the river moving.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're not, like, especially as babies, they're not like, okay, the next step is I need to learn how to crawl, the next step I need to go and reach up and start to stand. It's just, I think it's just very much ingrained. And I think obviously with the way that we've evolved, you know, that also, plays a big part. But, and a lot of it is also mimicking as well, too. So, I mean, the brain is very, they call about like neuroplasticity. And so that when kids, they see their parents, they see, other older kids and how they move, they're going to mimic, how they move, and they'll be able to pick up on that as well. So in a way, they're also very malleable.
Mimicking,
as well, too.
Mirroring their movement. I think we have a call on Delia on number 3. I know that I'm reading it wrong. No, I guess not Santa Cruz. No, guess not. So they're mimicking and mirroring what they see. And that reminds me of a story of where this young man, they said, you walk just like your dad, you walk just like your uncle. And they had hip issues. Mm-hmm. This young person had hip issues, and it was hindering them in sports.
Yeah.
And what they were mimicking was a chronic illness in their father and the menfolk.
Mm-hmm.
So they were imitating it, not just because it was there, but also as time went on, it was a bonding.
Yeah.
I want to walk like my dad, because everyone's supporting me. So you walk just like your dad.
Yeah.
Kind of a thing.
Yeah, and I mean, like, I for young kids, for babies, the people that they look up to are their parents.
Yeah.
So yeah, they're going to want to mimic and follow and copy the two people, or that one person, whoever, it's one or two, but that they love. And, there's something called mirror neurons. So again, just kind of ties into that neuroplasticity, that, what they see is what they're going to copy, what they're going to follow. And that's something I definitely kept in mind, for myself and with my daughter, with just how I move my body and making sure that I am moving my body and that she sees me moving my body all the time. I think, like one of the callers mentioned, like that, yes, that kids, that they are meant to move and that they do. And that, yes, I think over time, and especially because they're indoctrinated to just sit still and be quiet, that they're meant to move. And I think if they see other adults, and other kids also constantly moving and being playful and just moving, jumping around, then they're going to continue to do that. But if they see, whether it's their parents, loved ones, family members, that they spend their time, whether it's sitting or being sedentary or on their phone all the time, then they're going to see that as being the norm. So I think, having those positive examples in your life, definitely makes a big difference in just getting a chance to see what's going to happen, down the road, whether it's going to be, is it going to be a path towards chronic illness, or is it going to be a path towards, more health for them?
So it'd be interesting, too, to have you talk about it in a future segment about what our parents can look at with their children to see what could possibly become a chronic illness beyond when they go out into the world as adults.
Mm-hmm.
Tia, actually, I'm going to be inviting her. She has a podcast. How can people listen to your podcast?
Yeah. So I have a podcast. It's called The Masterful Art of Self-Care. The podcast is called The Masterful Art of Self-Care. And you can find it wherever you listen to podcasts. So whether that's on Apple, whether on Google Play, on Stitcher, on Spotify as well. You can go on anchor.fm/The Masterful Art of Self-Care, and you can, access that. You can also go to my website, themasterfulartofselfcare.com, and you can also access the podcast through there.
And what I'm going to offer, Tia, we're in discussion that, because I'm going to be doing a residency and hanging out in Hawaii. I'm going to also be doing a residency in New Orleans. So there'll be times where I'm going to actually have not a live show, but I will also be bringing you pre-recorded shows. Again, with the same thing, telling story about whatever the subject matter is, what holds us together and what separates us. And I'm going to invite Tia to sometime air her podcast if it fits inside of what we're doing here on KPFA. And so my email address, if you have topics that you want to have on Women's Magazine, The Space Between Us, is sugars, as in sugars, 982@gmail.com. That's sugars, S-U-G-A-R-S, at 982@gmail.com. We're going to take a music break. I'm going to
squeeze in Delilah. Call,
oh, she did? Okay, Delilah. We're going to squeeze in Delilah. Hi, Delilah. You're joining us at the river. Hello, Delilah?
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. Hey, third time's the charm.
Yes.
I wanted to address what you can do for self-care. I've been doing this for 15 years, and I can't speak highly enough about it. It takes me 15 minutes every morning. It's called the Tibetan Rites.
Mm.
You can look at them. There's lots of information about them online. They're basically five exercises. You do each exercise 21 times. It's core strengthening. It's good for your mental acuity and your physical conditioning, and I really believe the key is the practice over time. It only takes me 15 minutes a day, but you add it up for 15 years, and I'm healthier than I've ever been in my mind and my body.
Good for you. Good for you. Did you hear Delilah? Did I say that right?
It's Delia.
Delia. Did you hear early on that I shared about the Oakland Film Festival and that we were giving away passes? Hello? All right. All right, so we're going to take a music break and we come back. Tia's going to stay here in the studio with me, but I'm going to bring back the second half, my guest, that we're going to talk about that. Shalesse and Danielle, I'll introduce them formally. Intimacy, sexuality, and the route to ourselves. We'll be back after this music break. Magazine, The Space Between Us. I am your host, Javelin Richards, and I'm in the studio now. We're going to talk about the space between us, intimacy and sexuality, the space between us and the journey to both of those. And we're going to do that with experts. We're not going to just leave it into hands of Javelin, although I can truly take us there. I'm sure I could. Danielle Harrell is co-host of the series Somatic Sessions and the co-founder of the Somatic Institute of Sex and Relationship Coaching. But leave it there. And then Shalesse Hirschman is co-host of the series Somatic Sessions and the co-founder of Somatica Institute of Sex and Relationship Coaching. And they've written a book together. They're going to tell us that. They're going to take us on the journey. And Tia's going to stay in here just in case a question pops up that she wants to ask you. I think, first of all, you say that when we say the word sexuality and intimacy, a route to ourselves, the word itself is explosive. I'm sure you've known that in your journey. You've found that out. You say sex and everybody, the world either stops or it starts to spin. So listening audience, I want you to think about it. Intimacy, sexuality, the route to yourselves. Again, the number to call, we'll open the phone lines about 10 minutes. It's 510-848-4425. Tell us about your work.
Well, our work is really experiential sex and relationship coaching. So what we do is we go into vulnerable connection with our clients, and we also help our students learn how to do that because they're going to become sex and relationship coaches. And we use that vulnerable connection to help people increase their skills around erotic connection and emotional connection. So it's a very interactive, in-depth process of self-discovery.
So let's start with the why. Why did you two come up with this here, and how will it impact the space between us in our lives and get us closer to ourselves and to one another?
Yeah, so we started this work because we really felt that people look at sex as this thing that is the kind of like an exchange or something that they do with a partner, but they don't realize the power that the sexual energy has for themselves as self-care, as Tia was talking about, you know, like mm-hmm. as a way to go back to yourself and really be empowered and connect with this life force inside you.
So you see sex as a life force.
Yes.
And that if we're disconnected from that, what does that do to our life?
We're kind of like walking heads. And then most of the decisions that we get come from almost like an idea of what we should do, but not really embodied from what is really good for us or what do I really want.
So what I'm hearing is you're actually taking the word sex in itself and you're redefining it. That it's not this thing that we do or we're going to do at some point in our life or we need to do or we don't want to do. You're taking it to another definition of us to consider that it is a powerful life force that's within us. That is meant to do a lot more than just an exchange of body.
Yeah, so. it's our empowerment, it's our desire, it's sort of like what drives us to get what we really want out in the world. And I think when we're taught to disconnect from it, especially as women, we're taught to disconnect from it because of all of the slut-shaming that goes on and sort of like, that's not for us, it's for others, right? That it disempowers us in every area of our life. And when we reclaim our sexuality and we reclaim our connection to our desire, it helps us feel alive and motivated and inspired as in every, you know, as parents, as workers, as in every area of our life, basically.
How did you, I mean, what took you into being interested in this yourself?
Personally, I was just a very sexual young person. Like, I was very interested in sex. I didn't get a lot of shaming as a young person. My parents were hippies, and so there was a lot of relaxation around bodies. They were still, you know, it was the 70s, so people were a little bit uncomfortable around sex, but at least bodies were not shamed. And I just sort of loved to talk about sex. I loved the energy exchange of flirtation, and I knew it was something that I was really comfortable with, and I felt like I could help people with it. So from a pretty early age, I knew it was what I wanted to do. And then, you know, I went through all of the process of getting my degrees and meeting Danielle and creating this method. But it came from that, my own erotic desire being very strong.
And Danielle?
I also started with a really, really good, strong erotic desire. And I wanted to be a sex therapist when I was a teenager. And my parents were very policing and shaming around many, many, many fields, but not so much about sex because they didn't talk about it. It was great.
That's a nice concept to think about. They didn't police because they didn't talk about
exactly.
it.
Exactly. So in my case, it was great. I didn't know the route to get there. But then as I, you know, I studied therapy and I studied social work and I got my master's. But then like when I moved to the U.S. with my family, I really wanted to go back to those places. And I came through it again through childbirth. I studied childbirth education. I was pregnant with my daughter. And I really, through those studies, I realized how much women are disempowered around childbirth and around owning their bodies and around like owning their power in through childbirth. And also, like, no one talks to you about the connection between childbirth and sex. They do tell you that you get pregnant through mm-hmm. sex, so be careful, but they don't tell you, oh my God, you can use your sexuality to as a force to help you give birth. So that's how I got into
Alice
sex,
Walker yeah. speaks about it, and I think it's the Temple of the Familiar, that in some countries, and you've read the where they actually, the women around you doing birth will rub the inside of vagina, whatever medical terminology, like attorney, like you're a gynecologist. And they rub the inside with some type of cream, and that the woman can orgasm and help the baby come out.
Because all those functions of orgasm are not, they're actually functional for women. They're not just this luxury, you know, and they're functional for childbirth. They're functional for us women to feel better about ourselves. But even for childbirth, they help the baby move along. So, and
give us. So, first of all, I went to the website and I had a chance to watch a few of the videos that you have with your clients. So, tell us how the listening audience, if you're listening, we're talking about the journey towards intimacy, sexuality, a route to ourselves, and how the disruption of our understanding of our sexual presence in the world as women has been disrupted maybe through childbirth or slut shaming or no one even talking about it, but that there is a disconnect and how you can reconnect yourself to that and to move in the world more erotically, more connected. And so my guests have teamed up. What's the book that you came to, that you co-wrote together?
We co-wrote two books. One of them is Making Love Real, which is for couples, and another one is called Cockfidence, which is for men on how to be true to themselves and better lovers.
Cockfidence, C-O-C-K, Cockfidence. Just in case it got mixed up on the airwaves. The number to call is 510-848-4425, and the phone lines are open as of this moment. And again, I do know that the words, and I'm speaking it such as sexuality, sex, and intimacy are those explosive words, and I want them to be. Because I think that it's something we do need to be able to discuss. So going to the video that I saw, one of the things that, from what I understand that you do, is that a person will come to you, and I found this intriguing. They come to you, and they spend time, and they may talk about places where they're getting stuck inside of their own life, emotionally and sexually, with a partner, maybe, and that you may possibly, at that point, when the questions, you hold them. There's intimacy that's taking place, right?
Right.
And that you hold them close. You put your hand on their heart. It was very, very intimate and warm and loving and tender, all the things we associate to that type of closeness. One of the things you say, and I don't know which one said it on the video, one of your clients was saying that their partner wanted something. And they were having a hard time addressing it. And the response to the client was not so much as the request of their partner, but think about what they could get out of fulfilling that request. Did I hear that right?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's so important for people. They often come in and think, well, like, I have to make my partner feel good, or I have to. But if people don't come to sex with, like, what's in it for me and what do I want and what's going to really excite me about this experience, their partner doesn't actually get to feel their erotic energy. So we definitely want people to get inside of themselves and know what they want as a gift to themselves and their partner, because that's what creates the circuit. If everybody's bringing their true desires and we're communicating about them and we're learning them and we're practicing them together, then the energy can get really high.
Okay, we have a caller, Lisa, on the air with a question. Join us at the river. You have a story that deals with intimacy, sexuality, your route to yourselves. Join us. Hi, Lisa.
Hey, Javelin. Thank you.
Hi, so, Lisa.
I just want to mention asexuality because that's something I have felt postmenopausal, and I've also interviewed many people who actually have always felt asexual and are really trying to stress intimacy more. And that I have also noticed that nowadays young women feel more pressured to be sexual, and that there's a term which they had in Time magazine about women for whom sex is only of interest via intimacy, and that's a special term. It seemed to be very interesting that that's kind of like the norm now, that for women who want to have intimacy prior to sex.
You think that's, so are you saying that this is a new thing that's going on?
Yes, the young women are feeling very pressured to be sexual by men, and if they're not sexual, then they're considered, you know, something's wrong with them. The desire to have a relationship is seen as problematic. It's more about hookup culture.
So
those two things, the asexual on the one hand, and yet this also this pressure to be sexual. I'm interested to see what your guests have to say about that.
Thank you, Lisa, for joining us at the River. And I'm particularly interested in Lisa's story where she say that she's feeling asexual and happened to her after menopause. And so if she was to come to you as a client, how would you work with that?
Yeah, so I think women definitely go through different hormonal changes as they shift through the cycle of life. But on top of it, there's a lot of, because of slut shaming early on, and because women are not actually feeling the right to their own sexuality, and they always feel like they need to give it to someone else, so it's something about the relationship. Women don't spend a lot of time cultivating sexuality as a self-care process or something that is good for them. So when the hormonal support is gone, and for some women, it doesn't actually impact them as much. Some women feel okay after menopause, but many women do feel the hormonal, you know, like hormonal support is gone. They're like, oh, I don't even know where to start. And when we work with clients,
so what
like
do you
that,
mean? So when you say they don't know where to start, what does it mean?
They don't have any access to the sexual route. Okay, because they did not spend a lifetime developing this as a language of connection with themselves.
Mm.
And because the message that we got is that sex is for someone else.
So the hormones is not driving it, which the hormones are driving it early on in sexual being. So that's, you don't even have to do anything. It's just there. Suddenly you're just sitting in a room and you're just like, oh my God, my nipples are hard. I'm juicy, juicy.
Right.
Kind of a vibe, right? Mm-hmm. And you're saying,
if you let yourself acknowledge that, because
if you
women,
even let yourself, yeah, or if you do just, feel it, you're just, yeah, then you feel shame.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And so you're saying that when the hormones are gone, if a woman, a person were connected to their sexuality, their sexual power, they would probably know where to begin. Hormones are gone, but here's another way I'm going to enter this door.
Or even like look at it as something that's not only about relationship, but yes, exactly as you said. And then like they will explore. If that was like a lifelong practice, mm-hmm, they would learn how, they will need to change things and navigate it because it's not the same high as they had when they're like 19 and not the same high as they had when they're 35. But even within one cycle, women feel ups and downs in arousal, but learning to really cultivate the self-care and connection to their sexuality is something that's like for me, really for me and not for someone else. And giving women permission to do that is the most powerful thing.
And I want to just add, because I want to honor that there are people who, once they go through the process of trying to see if they have sexual desire, are asexual. So it's not to say that there aren't asexual people or that people don't end up that way. But and our job isn't to make people sexual. Our job is to help people connect with their true will and follow it.
True will and follow. And I think that's important. So you're listening to Celeste and Danielle. We're talking about intimacy, sexuality, a route to ourselves. And also Tia's here with us. The number to call if you want to join us at the River is 851-510-848-4425. Tia, you have a burning question.
Yeah, so I mean, I had a question with regards to sexual self-care, and I think that it's great that you're talking about it and you have books about that, and I think not a lot of people are very aware of it. Again, you know, wanting to break that stigma of self-care, people think it's very superficial, but I recently taught a workshop on, you know, pelvic floor empowerment, and I feel that sexual self-care is a huge aspect of it. So I'd love to hear, like, what are tools or how do you teach some of your clients how to do self-care for their sexual being? Like, how do you teach them, or what do you do for your sexual self-care?
Oh, go for it.
Yeah, my housemate jokes that I live on salmon and orgasms. Orgasms are my number one form of self-care. Uh-huh. If I don't have them regularly, I feel depressed and listless. And when I have them regularly, I just feel so much more alive and relaxed, and kind of any problems that come my way, I can handle it. So so they're definitely my main self-care. And, you know, for people who aren't connected to themselves in that way, we really start with self-connection. A lot of times people come in, especially women, they come in, they say, I want to have better sex with my partner. But we have to help them first reconnect with themselves. You know, how do they like to touch their own body? How do they need to breathe in order to feel more alive and connected? How do they want to move their bodies or make sound that helps enliven that? What are their fantasy lives like? You know, do they have a fantasy life? Have they ever gone out and tried to discover something about sort of what psychologically arouses them? So we're looking at all of those aspects and really helping them build themselves a foundation of eroticism from the ground up. Then they're ready to share it with a partner.
A little bit like if someone would want to, if we know that exercising is good for you, right? So if someone would come to me and say like, hey, I want to build muscle, right? So you need to start from the basics. That's how we treat connecting with your desire. We start with the basic and we help people really grow it in a very systematic way.
So this is a lot of a wonderful information. So let's slow it down so that for my listening audience, what I want them to be able to do is actually imagine if someone is listening and they want to understand the power of their own sexual desire and open that wonderfulness and they come to you. What is a session like? Hello, and then what happens?
Hello, and many times It is really helping them connect with their own body first, as Celeste said, breathing in, connecting with the body, starting to notice like how it feels like if they make sound. Sounds are, our voices are very connected to our pelvic floor.
Our voices are connected to our pelvic floor. What do you hear when you hear someone in front of you? You know, if we were doing live, I would actually have them work with you, Tia. I would.
Yeah.
Right. So a person comes, they're talking to you and they're breathing. What information are you two gathering?
We're gathering information about whether they allow themselves to breathe fully and make sound, or they're shy and feel embarrassed to make sound and don't even use the sound as for example, sound is one of them. You know, self-touch is another one. So what we do, because we're experiential, we really sit with them and give them example. We demonstrate ourselves, and then we invite them. And if they breathe very silently, I encourage them using my own breath, making sounds while they are breathing. And eventually, they sometimes join me. And if they don't join me, I make louder sounds a little bit. And then eventually,
take us through a breathing, me and Tia, through a breathing. I know we'll do it in a way that we don't shock the airways like the sound effects. But take us through it.
Yeah, so what you want to do is just sit and kind of, you can close your eyes or keep them open, whatever feels more connected to you.
Tia, I should have asked your permission. Are you comfortable with this?
Oh, yeah, totally.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then you start.
No, I've been doing a lot of work myself on sexual self-care.
All right, so our listening audience, you can join us at 510-848-4425. We're about to go into breathing into our own sexual health, okay?
Yeah, and then you take a breath into your chest, and you might even put a hand on your chest if you want to feel the connection to your body more deeply. And you let the breath expand and relax your chest. And just start to feel the inside of your body becoming more open and soft and receptive. And then you take another nice, slow, deep breath down into your belly. Maybe you want to put a hand on your belly. And let the belly expand into your hand as you're breathing in and out. And then start to bring your conscious awareness all the way down to your pelvic floor. Again, you can put a hand on your pelvic floor if you feel like that will connect you more deeply.
Yes. And as she continues to talk, I'm going to explain what I was experiencing. Go and keep taking Tia to it.
Feel the breath coming all the way down into your
As I was experiencing
floor.
That, I actually began to pay attention to my own heartbeat, and I still haven't opened my eyes,
just
which is
feel
really nice.
The pelvic floor soften.
And
as
then,
you breathe into
when I put
it.
My hand on my stomach, I became aware of the movement of my stomach pushing against the palm of my hand.
And if you want, you can let the breath come out with a little bit of sound through your throat, like
And then listening to their breathing, I began to hear the sound of the ocean, right? And then when she said to the pelvic floor, I literally felt my vagina, my that part of my ear, the tinglingness became aware of that.
And if you want to increase the tingling a little bit, you can even squeeze the muscles in your pelvic floor, like you're stopping yourself from peeing as you're breathing in.
And I hope some of you out there are joining us, 510-848-4425.
See if you can let that tingle move up through your whole body.
Yes.
A little more sound out from your throat with the next squeeze. And that's how we start to get connected.
Yes, yes, yes. If you joined us out there in listening land, Shalesh and Danielle is taking us through intimacy and sexuality, the route to ourselves, and how empowering to know who we are within that and to navigate the world and to move from that space of empowerment, the joy, the secrets of our own sensuality. Tia, how did that, what did you experience?
I mean, for me, just because this is something that I have been working with, actually, with, like, a sexual health coach.
And you're working with a sexual health care person?
Yeah, yeah, I have. And, yes, I mean, she's absolutely right. I mean, just the movement of the breath is, like, really the first way to start to really connect, you know, the voice with the pelvic floor. And, you know, as I started, I didn't even realize just how much I was already clenching and holding. And then just with that exhale, like letting the breath out, it was kind of like that awareness of like, okay, I'm holding down there and being able to allow that to relax and let go. And then
where's
that,
down there? Are you talking about your kneecap at this point?
No.
Say the
No, my pelvic floor.
Okay. Just want to check. Vagina, your pelvic floor down there.
Yeah.
Down there. Be careful down there. All right, we have Adams. Not yet. They're screening. All right, so in the last few minutes, we have about 3 minutes. And appreciate you walking us through that journey, and I'm sure that some of our listeners actually had an opportunity to breathe inside and close their eyes and take a moment for their sexual health right today. So that was really good. How do people get hold of you, and where are the classes that you hold? Tell us that information.
Well, we're really excited. We have an intro to our core training, which is a year-long training that happens once a year that starts in April. And our first intro is September 28th here in Berkeley from 4 to 6 p.m. And you can sign up on our website, which is somaticainstitute.com. That's S-O-M-A-T-I-C-A. Institute.com.
We have Veronica on line one. Hi, Veronica. Thank you for joining us at the River. I'm your host, Javelin.
Hi, thank you. I've been thinking about this, so it's just really funny that I turned on the radio and this was a topic. But yesterday, actually, I just kind of stumbled upon like a disorder, like a hypoactive sexual dysfunction disorder, and I've been feeling that lately. But I also have gone through a lot. I also, I wouldn't say struggle, but I kind of identify with being on the ACE spectrum. So I'm just kind of curious with like how to go about that, because I've been feeling like really low and frustrated lately.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Veronica. So we have about a minute to address that, but also too, Veronica, I think I'm going to do a follow-up show with Shalesh and Danielle. Because this is way too important. I think it's more than just this, okay? So how do you speak to Veronica?
Yeah, so she's dealing with low desire, and I think so many women are dealing. It's the number one thing that women are dealing with when they come into our offices. And firstly, I just want you to be super gentle on yourself and stop beating yourself up, because this is not your fault. Our whole society says it's not okay for you to be sexual. So I really want you to take off the pressure and just know that it's going to be a slow process. And if you can be kind to yourself and get help and support, then you can start to connect with this part of yourself and have more of this kind of pleasure in your life.
All right. I want to thank my guests. This has been a really wonderful show. I hope you agree with me here at the River today. It's been wonderful. I'm also going to even, as I said, I'm going to have Tia do some segments that as I'm moving around in the world traveling. But also, after we get off this here show, I'm going to ask you two to possibly be coming and host while I'm traveling a live call-in show.
Yes.
They're nodding yes.
Sure.
And I want you to email me, my listening audience, at sugars982@gmail.com if you would like to have Shalessa and Danielle to live call-in show dedicated to your sexual intimacy, period. Thank you for joining us today. I've been your host, Javelin, The Space Between Us.
So, what's up with the news? Where is it? News media in a democracy must investigate, inform, maintain an unwavering check on political power. Why doesn't ours? Mickey Huff, director of Project Censored and co-host of the Project Censored show, has co-written with Nolan Higdon, The United States of Distraction, a book that explains exactly how this failure came to be and how to fight back and win. Both authors will appear October 22nd, a Tuesday evening, at 7:30 p.m. at the Hillside Club, 2286 Cedar Street in Berkeley. This KPFA benefit, wheelchair accessible, is co-sponsored at Project Censored. Get tickets at brownpapertickets.com or East Bay Indie Bookshops. For Nolan Higdon and Mickey Huff, October 22nd.
You're listening to 94.